there's all other kinds of committees going on. We have, it would be good if you, I know it seems funny, but Senator Kelly might come in, he might want his chair. And Senator Hoffman's here. Ma'am, if you did sign up, I'm sorry, I don't know which one of these you are, so if you want to just state your name for the record and go ahead.
I'm Teresa Siebert. I'm from Dillingham. I work with the EMS groups in Bristol Bay.
Well, thanks for being here today. Do you want to testify on the operating budget?
Yes, on the effects, the proposed budget cuts to the DHSS and community health and EMS grants to regions. That would have a devastating effect on our first responder groups. We have, 28 villages, and the people in the villages take training, 40-hour classes to be ETTs and EMTs. Those are 140-hour classes. But after the classes, they're eligible for mini-grant monies, which comes from the Southern Region EMS office through the state. See, we're a sub-area. And that's the only place they have to get any supplies, like their bandages, dressings, blood pressure cuffs, and all the basic things. So if the mini-grant money was cut from the state, they wouldn't have any source for their supplies. There's 7 EMS regions, and most of those regions already have had to cut off their mini-grant monies to their first responders, with the budget just being flat as it has been in previous years. So this would really hurt us.
Are you finished, ma'am?
There's some proposed cuts to the state office. They're already seriously understaffed. They process all our tests from throughout Alaska, and they would have to cut some positions too. So I have a paper. I'll give it for the record.
Oh, we welcome that. We'll take that and put it in the testimony. Senator Hoffman, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those 7 EMS regions cover the whole state?
The entire state, from Barrow all the way down to Duluth and Chain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you. You just happen to be in town, and you're from Dillingham, and Dillingham was first up today, so thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll go out on the teleconference line, and let me get my notes back here. The only page I've really been given so far for who's out there signed up to testify is the folks at the Homer Legislative Information Office, and Mako Haggerty is the first person signed up. Are you there?
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Mako Haggerty.
Okay, we're going to try to keep the testimony to about 2 minutes. We're going to have a lot of people today, so if you'd like to go ahead and proceed.
Well, actually, in our effort to help you with that, there's a number of people in this room that came to testify, but I'm going to speak for most of them here. My name is Mako Haggerty, and I'm chairman of the Kachemak Bay State Park Citizen Advisory Board. I'm also a member of Friends of Kachemak Bay State Park. It's a local nonprofit that's been set up to support our local state park. I also run a water taxi service here on Kachemak Bay and provide transportation across the bay. The park is one of the destinations. I'm here to ask you to fund the state parks to the highest level possible. Our state park here, Kachemak Bay State Park, is a favorite destination of residents as well as visitors from outside. This park has recorded visitors from 60 different countries and all of the state. These out-of-state visitors make the rounds throughout Alaska, and Kachemak Bay State Park is only one of the parks that they visit. And I know this firsthand from talking to them. They tell me that they tell me about all the parks that they've visited in this state, so it's quite a drawing card. The condition of these parks leaves a lasting impression on these visitors, and for many, it is their first impression of Alaska. The nature of tourism has changed over the last 15 years here in Homer visitors are coming for the wilderness experience or ecotourism, as well as our halibut. My water taxi provides transportation across the bay to the park, and my fleet has grown to 3 boats now. There are other water taxis up here that are adding to their fleet, and as well as new water taxis that are entering into the business. If you add to that the B&Bs, the kayak guides, the wilderness lodges, there's a whole economic sector that depends on what our state park offers. In fact, in 1988, trail registers recorded less than 500 hikers and campers. And last year, close to 4,000 people signed in on the registers.
Mr. Haggerty, could you please try to wrap it up?
I'm just about done. I believe that this only represents a small percentage of the actual visitor count. When you start counting kayakers, beachcombers, fishermen, as well as cabin users, well, you understand where I'm going with this. We support the recommendation of user fees being transferred to receipt-supported services. Please support the state parks. Thank you.
Thank you. Josh Perry in Homer.
Yeah, my name is Josh Perry. I'm 20 years old and just moved to Alaska from Texas. I came up here last year to volunteer for Alaska State Parks and been training, maintaining trails in Kachemak Bay State Park. It's a good job. I returned last month and I'm currently volunteering again while I await real seasonal employment on the trail crew this summer. I didn't come here for the money, look for a high salary job or anything like that. Not as a volunteer and not as an ACCer. I came here to experience Alaska mostly and to contribute something, and I'd like to stay and continue to contribute. I've had the opportunity to meet most of the park staff here on the Kenai and in other places of Alaska, and I don't think you know how fortunate you are to have such a dedicated public servant, such a great park system. Parks are where the people go to relax, to recreate, play, fish and hunt, and just recharge themselves. From what little I've seen, the last thing you should be doing is cutting state parks' budget. You should be increasing it and tripling it if you can. Consider it a wise investment that will pay up calculable dividends far beyond your lifetimes or mine. And I know you're familiar with the concept of dividend investing, so on and so forth. Being from Texas, I always thought Alaskans would want to have the biggest and best of everything, including your parks and your park rangers. And I'm now a registered voter. I'll be expecting it from you. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Joshua. Oh, sorry, sir. Please go ahead.
Common mistake there. My name is Joshua Duffus, and I also work for Alaska State Parks. Like Josh Perry, I came to Alaska to volunteer on a trail crew here at Kachemak Bay State Park in 1997. I stayed and was hired the next year as a crew leader, and 2 years ago I was hired as a permanent seasonal park technician. I recently put myself through a public safety academy to prepare myself and make myself more competitive and eligible to become a park ranger. I didn't start out to pursue this career. I came up here on a whim after receiving my college degree from Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and I fell in love with this place and learned what a great lifestyle and how rewarding it is to have a job where we contribute to the future. The concept of public service didn't occur to me until I came here. I dislike the common theme and misconception that state employees are only in it for the money and benefits. The proposed cut to the state park's budget is a backward step in my belief. Like Mr. Perry stated, you should be increasing it. We come from states that have parks, but not like this, and not used to and enjoyed to such a degree. It doesn't matter if these cuts don't directly impact Kachemak Bay State Park. It will affect people like me and Josh Perry and many others. Cutting the staff that manages the parks proposed to be closed is what is really happening. The parks are not closing. The staff is being fired because that is where the cuts are to operate the park. Clean latrines, pick up litter, keep the seeds, maintain amenities, etc. Like any business, the cost is in the overhead. However, in these cases, the overhead is where the work is actually done and where the public is most affected. Budget has been so poor for so long anyway. My boss jokes quite a bit about how with the oil spill money, I can actually buy real nails rather than bending old rusty ones. Great. They could build new facilities to attract more people, but not to take care of the current demand.
Joshua, can you try to wrap up your comments?
Surely. He not so jokingly hands out duct tape and baling wire as our toolkit. I think the budget is pitiful as it is, let alone what it's got. I can only guess some of you don't care about the resource and the public safety and community facilities and parks that are open to all people. Please find the money somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy Kiefer?
When I heard state parks were going to be cut yet again, I was extremely appalled at this because I volunteered for state parks since last year, and I've seen them beg and borrow to the point where I don't see any misuse of funds, and I can't believe that we're talking yet again about funding, cutting, spending, and vacancies. You're talking about a death blow to tourism, which it has to affect our economy and the health of our community. Pretty much that's all I've got to say. You should be adding money to state parks instead of taking away from it.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Lisa Ruoff?
Yeah, I have been a citizen and also am a registered voter of Homer, Alaska for the past 5 years or so. And from what I've seen, the state parks have been scrounging around for anything they can possibly get, have been using the money for the best benefit of all involved. In my opinion, if this is cut, tourism will be cut drastically, along with regular visitors from the area itself. And I don't see how it's possible to keep it running up to its best standard without more money, let alone taking away some. So I would say that you have to add instead of decrease whatever funding state parks get. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Jennifer Reinhardt.
Good afternoon. I am here because I'd like to testify about the university budget. I was born and raised here in Alaska, and my husband and I are now raising our family here. And I'd like to urge you to try and find a way to fully fund the UA operating general fund increase. I'll be graduating from the Ketchikan Bay campus here this spring with a bachelor's degree, and I've been very impressed at the quality of the education that I've received here. Our college offers a wealth of opportunities for the young people and the adults, both for adult basic ed and English as a second language, and then continuing education, associate degrees, bachelor degrees. The university's operating budget request this time around includes a full-time science faculty position that is really critical for our campus here. Having a permanent faculty science position would ensure that classes could be offered in a timely manner and promote program stability and possibly lay the foundation for a marine biology program down here in Homer. And the position would also instruct the courses that meet just the general education requirements for all degree-seeking students down here in Homer. I just really encourage you to look into finding some way to fund that increase and show your commitment to the Alaskan people.
Thank you for your testimony. Roger McCampbell.
Well, I wasn't sure I was going to speak, but I'm a citizen, registered voter. I'm also about a 30-year career park ranger, so I've kind of been around the block a few times. And I no longer manage places like Anchor River and Deep Creek. I am the district ranger for Ketchikan Bay, but I can't help but think back in the 1860s when a few guys were sitting around a campfire out in Montana and decided that that would make a great park to protect it from development future, and it was the first national park. You know, our state parks have been an outgrowth of that for our local citizens, and all I can say, gentlemen, it's a great system, and as you've heard from a lot of people here, I think half the town of Homer that started here came to Alaska to volunteer, and they're all now contributing to the economy. I think of all the volunteers, you know, we manage a park system mostly with volunteers, and those are lost jobs. Not just the position of the paid state employees going away, it's the volunteerism, the retirees that help us manage these parks. It's an incredibly efficient system. And I can say that way because I spent 12 years with the federal system. So so many times. Just Drew Scalzi the other day was telling me about a constituent complaint about a park ranger over in Prince William Sound telling him to take a badminton net down on the beach. And I told Drew, I said, that wasn't a state park ranger. That must have been a federal ranger, because a state park ranger would have joined in and played badminton with him. Sometimes I think a few of you folks up there mistake federal rangers that you don't like, and I can't say I don't blame you for some of their actions, but somehow it gets confused with the state system. And so when it comes to budget cuts, it seems like we get confused, and you know, it's not that big a deal. And we're not the feds, we're your employees, and we need your support. Please restore the budget. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Rogers. Anybody else there at the Homer LIO?
Yes, we just had another person walking.
Okay. While you're getting ready to testify, Senator Lehman, you had a...
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if these people testifying have had the benefit of listening in when we did the summaries of the subcommittee budgets, but I'd like them to know that the Senate action restored more than half of what was removed in the parks in the House budget, and we are working on a mechanism for developing the funding for the other part. And so I know they're concerned about it, and I share their concern as well as a number of other people, but we're constructively working on it. This approach that we're working on will take other legislation to make that possible. So I just want to make sure that they're aware of that.
Thank you, Senator Lehman. So is there somebody else at the Homer LIO wanted to testify?
Hi, my name is Joey Eastman, and I'm a student at KBC. As a student at Kenai Peninsula College, Ketchumet Bay campus, I would like to urge you to realize the importance of full funding for our university. I'm a volunteer tutor for the adult basic education math class. The students in this class are there because they want to better their lives, and they want to become economic assets to our state rather than burdens. My goal is becoming a teacher of adult basic education. Cutting funding for the university is an economic step backwards for the state of Alaska. And I'd like to encourage you to please fund the entire operating budget request. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Zach. Everybody from Homer?
Yeah, this is Keith Iverson. I own and operate and built Sadieco Wilderness Lodge within the Kitchmack Bay State Park. I've been living there. Not only is it my business, it's been my year-round home for almost 30 years with my wife, Randy. We've seen quite a change in the park. 1980, when I opened the lodge, we had, as lodge guests, maybe one or two people that hiked back into the valleys. And at that time, there was really no trail system. Now there are trail systems, and now, instead of everybody going fishing, we've got a majority of the people going from our lodge into the park system. I don't have a lot to say on this issue other than I do support the state parks. Ecotourism, it's one of the bright lights in the state economy, and rather than being cut, it should be funded to a greater extent. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Keith. Anyone else in Homer?
No, that is all. Thank you.
Okay, we'll close testimony from Homer. We're going to go to Dillingham. Senator Ward, would you chair for a couple minutes, please? The first person in Dillingham is Marilyn Rosney.
Hi, this is Marilyn Rosine from Dillingham.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you to those of you who are at the hearing today. I'm a classroom teacher in Dillingham and have lived here since 1982. And staff turnover in rural Alaska is very high. It's been difficult for our school to make the progress that we should towards being standards-based because we're constantly training and seeking new staff. I've worked with 8 building principals and 6 superintendents since I've been here. It is important to work for continuity, and I have become one of the guardians of what is working in our school, and I work with others to change or improve what is not. I value action, and I thrive on getting things done, and I'm willing to work hard. One of the research pieces about education is the quality of a child's teacher has the greatest impact on school achievement. That's been proven many, many times through research. And the goal of dramatically enhancing school and student performance is not likely to succeed without a sustained commitment to teacher learning and professional development. And it's very hard to professionally develop if you don't have the people in the schools. And our school district is undergoing a tremendous turnover this year, and financial security to the people who are here and to those who come to our community is very important. I believe that each of you, each and every one of you, whether you're there or not, is a statesman or a stateswoman of the state of Alaska. And I believe that each of you needs to work for me. And each of you needs to work for each and every person who's listening to this and lives in the state of Alaska. If Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and the other guys hadn't thought about others than their own constituents and their own colonies, we wouldn't be speaking today. And I take that very seriously as I do my own job. The Constitution mandates that we adequately fund education, and from what I've heard recently, an additional $190 per student this year would help dramatically put us where we need to be to serve our children. I'm willing to work hard, and I would encourage you to call upon those who are educators in the state to help you get the word out as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and a reminder for those online, if you have written testimony, you can leave that at the LIO office and they will get it to us. The next one that I have is Dorothy Larson in Dillingham.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for your time. I am here representing the Chogoyam Tribal Council as the tribal administrator, and I'm here to speak on behalf of remaining with at least current levels of funding for the alcohol and drug abuse program, if not increases. And I realize that everyone who's testified today most likely is asking for either current funding levels or increases in those funding levels. So thanks for your time. I have a packet with numbers of adverse effects to clients and customers through these programs, but I think I'd like to keep it more on a personal level. I was born and raised in Dillingham and have been a resident of the Bristol Bay region all of my life, which is 42 years. Any decreases in funding for the alcohol and drug abuse programs have been absorbed by our local health care provider, and so the decreases that are being proposed now will not be able to be absorbed by that agency to keep our service levels at the same rate. The Jake's Place provides for residential treatment for our whole region, and has been doing a wonderful job of getting the message on the street and advocating for people and individuals to come through the treatment program, recognizing their abuse and doing something about it. We've seen a drastic change in people's attitudes, and they're taking advantage of this resource to try to better themselves. So any funding will most likely result in possibly the decrease of services, but not only that, but possibly the closure of the residential treatment in our region. We strongly advocate to keep that there because we have asked people throughout the region for as many years as I can remember and as my father remembers. We've asked people to leave the region to receive services, and any urban treatment facilities just don't have that necessary traditional atmosphere for positive recovery and change. So we advocate that you do not cut the alcohol and drug abuse program budget by 20%, and in fact, at least keep it at its current funding level and increase it to support our system. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person that I have in Dillingham is Deanna Harding.
Thank you for hearing us. My name is Deanna Harden. I work for Head Start here in Dillingham. I am one of the site supervisors of, we have four sites, Head Start sites throughout the region. I am advocating for full support of funding for the rural university because our Head Start requires our staff to get their CDAs, which is their Child Development Associate, and currently they can get that through university classes.
Also, it is a national requirement that half of all Head Start teachers by the fall of 2003 receive their AA degree or their bachelor's in early childhood. These are requirements that were put on us, and we would like to fulfill them. We would rather hire locally and have our teachers and staff attend local universities rather than hire from outside. I'm also speaking today as a student of the university. I am working on my AA degree in early childhood, which I plan to graduate this spring in May, and I would like to invite you all to come to my graduation here in Dillingham. I appreciate the ability to work from my hometown. It gives me the chance to stay with my family as I earn my degree. I have discovered that as I am taking my classes and my children are taking their classes, I've become a role model. My children advocate for my taking classes and my learning. They help me out at home whenever they can. And I am very busy. I have a full-time job. I have a family to raise, and I also have my own business. So if I can make the commitment to further my education at home, I would like you to make the commitment to help out the rural universities so that I can continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The next person that I have is Karen Kelly. Karen, are you there? Okay, Christy Nielsen.
I suspect that's me, Senator. That's Christy Willard-Tilden. And I'll take her spot.
Yes, go ahead, please. state your name again, please.
Senator, my name for the record is Christy Willard-Tilden. I am the director of the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation's Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Treatment Program. And I am here to discuss the proposed cuts to the Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. As you know, probably, the BBHC operates a fully accredited treatment program consisting of residential treatment, detox, outpatient prevention, and a field of village-based counselors. We are, as such, the only game in town for this region. We serve people from Good News Bay to New Haven, Koliganik to Perryville. It's an area about the size of Ohio. There are 34 villages in our catchment area and about 50 miles of roads. Our treatment programs have been flat funded for as long as I've been here, which is about 14 years, from the division, despite cost of living increases and salary increases, and now astronomical increases in insurance rates. All of that difference has been supplemented by the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation through their federal money through Indian Health Service and through the revenues that they take in through medical services. But they have just been barely able to pour in enough to keep us afloat. As their portion has grown over time, the federal money is also drained away, and they're becoming tapped out as well. By the way, I'd like to mention that if there are any of you who still think that federal money will plug in our budget gaps, I hope you've read the statement that the Alaska Federation of Natives released a few days ago, clearly stating that the money that they've recently acquired for their sobriety efforts is not to be used for treatment programs and will not be used as such. Anyway, if we're to actually face a 20% cut in our grant line, it is 20% that we could not find anywhere else. I believe we would quite possibly have to shut the doors at Jake's Place on July 1st. I believe the people of Bristol Bay are making significant, difficult, lasting changes in their lives. They're doing that with our help, and that's help that will no longer be available to them without your help. I've also heard it said that Alaskans are not yet ready for an income tax, that they're not hurting enough. And I do think that whoever said that must not have visited Bristol Bay lately. We are really ready to pay our way, especially if we know that our money would be spent to support the rural area that we love and is part of a well-thought-out long-range fiscal plan. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Jennifer Jones Molina.
Yes, hi. Thank you. I want to thank the senators for being here and listening to all of our testimonies today. I'm a relatively new teacher to the profession. I'm in my third year of teaching in Dillingham, and this is my fourth year overall in teaching. And as a teacher, I do several jobs. I act as a social worker, and it's interesting to listen to the funding for places like Jay's Place, because their parents, a lot of parents that are able to use the facility of Jay's Place are parents of kids in my classroom, so I think that it ties them very nicely together. Anyway, I also am a custodian in the classroom because of funding. We, you know, had to cut back time that custodians are allowed to spend in our building. And then, of course, this year I was also asked to look for individuals to fill positions of classified staff that were needed with our special education department. And I'm kind of playing that or giving you this information because it's daunting to me as a new person to have all of these roles. And as a social worker now, and as a custodian, and also I'm a teacher as well. And I am now, we have these state standards that have been implemented, but I have few materials to work on those standards, and they cost money. And most important, in able to teach these standards or implement the standards, I need training in understanding the standards and how to implement them, and this also takes money as well. Our Alaska Constitution mandates that the state provide an education system that offers all children the opportunity to succeed in life. And providing an adequate education is not a rural or an urban issue, it's an Alaskan issue. And I just, you know, I would like the legislatures to put our children first, and they are our future. So I ask you to please increase the funding formula by $190 per child to help fund education. Alaska ranks dead last among the states in kindergarten through 12th grade education spending as a percentage of total net spending. And the percentage decline in per pupil spending over the past two decades is the highest in the country. So again, I really want to ask you to please increase that funding for us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Actually, Alaska, according to the National Education Association governing source book from 1999, ranks first in total education spending per capita, ranks first in education spending as a percentage of personal income of citizens. It ranks fourth in K-12 spending per student, and it ranks fifth in the state's share of education spending versus local contributions from local school districts. All in all, Alaska ranks higher in more categories of education funding than any other state in the union. It's about 40% of our total state budget, in fact, general fund spending, education budget. But thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else at the Dillingham LIO that would like to testify?
Yes, Senator. I believe that I was scheduled to be next on the list. My name is Pearl Strew.
Well, please proceed.
Okay, Senators, I'm here today, and it was really difficult for me to actually sign in and register and figure out who I was representing, because I'm here as a parent of a student who's attending the University of Alaska. I'm also here as an agency who provides, who is involved in workforce development and trying to get the people in our region into employment, especially at a time when it's critical with our economic situation here out in Bristol Bay. And I also am here as a representative of the Bristol Bay Campus Advisory Council. And so I guess you know that I'm in full support of full funding to the university budget. The Bristol Bay Campus provides not only adult basic education, general education, and higher education to many students in our region who otherwise would not have access to the university system. many of these people, and Deanna's testimony, I think, is probably the same testimony that many of our students throughout the region would tell you, is that if it wasn't for the university and the access and the Bristol Bay campus out here, it would not be a possibility for them to move to onto the urban campuses to receive education. So that's not an option. I was really tickled that Deanna was able to tell you her story about that. Each year, the Bristol Bay campus averages at least 25 general GEDs, and then we also have an average of about 12 degrees and certificates. The Bristol Bay campus provides education not only to people who are tracking on certificates and degrees, but also continuing education classes to the agencies here who are providing valuable services in the region, such as the Health Corporation, the Native nonprofits, and also the elementary and secondary institutions. And so without these services out here, that too would be lost. The last couple of years, I want to thank you for your support that you have provided to the university in granting their budget request. And I think that if we don't continue that full support, the life that you actually brought back to the university system will all be lost. So as a parent of a student who is in the university system, and also as an employee who receives continuing education, and also as someone who witnesses daily the positive effect education has here in Bristol Bay campus, I ask you to support full funding of the university budget. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Don Ford?
Yes, Senator. Thank you for listening to our testimony today. I'm Don Ford, school board member and parent for Dillingham City Schools. And I believe education has to be the top priority to ensure Alaska's future development of its deserving citizens, vast resources, and great economic potential. Education's funding importance and priority has diminished over the years. This is due to the rising cost of fuel, insurance, salaries, textbooks, supplies, as some of the teachers have already mentioned, and maintenance. There is also increased cost of rising expectations, leading to educational commitment in areas of all children achieving high standards, serving increasingly diverse needs of students, increasing the quality of and knowledge of all the staff, which the teachers have commented on, the great need for more staff development, and updating and developing of curriculum, which leads the educational program, critical to it. These costs are increasing at the same time education is being willingly held more accountable by state and national mandates, which are underfunded or non-funded. In 1990, only 17% of the state's budget was directed towards education. In 2000, that funding dropped to 14% of the budget. This is the lowest percent of any state's budget funded towards education in the nation. We are dead last. I welcome the bills in the last few years from the legislature to mandate more educational accountability. But this year, proposed budget cuts to EED and the under and non-funding of these very same bills you've passed will not allow us, the educational system, to translate the data that they require, that any of these bills, into information needed to make the data-driven decisions you, the legislature, has asked for. And it's very critical data in making our decisions. I just thank you for your time. I trust you will do the right thing for our kids and our future.
Thank you, Don. I think the numbers you're quoting there on 14% is of total state spending. One of the things that distorts that number is a massive influx of federal highway dollars, over $1 billion in the state, thanks to our congressional delegation. Actually, the funding importance of education has not diminished in Alaska. over the last 10 years, the real true measure is general fund expenditures. That's what's directly related to the fiscal gap. And K through 12 education spending went from 28% of our general fund budget to 34% of our general fund budget just for the K through 12 component. So there has been an increase in our general fund commitment to education over the last 10 years. Annie Fritz.
Hi, this is Annie Christie. I just want to thank you for listening to our testimony. I'm calling for, in regards to full support for the local campus. As a student currently attending Bristol Bay campus here in Dillingham, having the local campus has been very beneficial. I'm not able to move my family to Fairbanks or Anchorage to obtain my degree in the rural development program. By having the local campus here, I'm able to stay at home and work as well, rather than moving my entire family and my household. As a Head Start site specialist, my staff are also required to take classes towards their Associate of Arts degree in early childhood. Without the local campus, their higher educational endeavors would not be met. BBC has also coordinated training classes with other entities ranging from discipline classes for elementary, high school, or Head Start agencies, and obtaining a HAZWOPR certificate. High school children are also take advanced math courses through the Bristol Bay campus, and they earn college degrees while still attending high school. The local campus also offers computer classes that are very beneficial for employment, and they also teach computer classes for majority of our illiterate computer parents in the rural communities. My grandfather was a very, very strong advocate for higher education, for education. Today, he would be very, very proud of where the Bristol Bay campus has come. They've graduated many, many fine students. And he always used to end his quote with, "You school now." And now as a senior in the program, I can say, "Yes, grandfather, I school now." Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Sonny Levesque.
Sonny Levesque. And I'm speaking as a student, the spouse of a student, and the father of a graduate of the rural university system. And I've heard your colleagues use the term of the unprofitable rural university system. I'd like to remind you that the universities are not businesses designed to make a cash profit, but I think that each person who graduates or even attends classes that improves their marketable skills is a direct dividend paid to our state. To arbitrarily discard or reduce the effectiveness of rural education is not only wantonly wasting the resources of educated people, but is also creating a future and direct drain on the resources of the urban areas where the rural residents are no longer capable of getting adequate education to contribute in the workforce. Expecting rural students to relocate to the cities for schooling is completely unfeasible, considering that the schools are built to capacity now, housing is all but non-existent, and the students would be faced with the overwhelming task of day-to-day living, whereas in their hometowns they have that support structure. Well, they'd be faced with this day-to-day living while also trying to get an education. The urban areas are not prepared for nor capable of supporting an influx of poorly educated, unemployable, ex-Bush residents, and that is the economic burden they are asking for by reducing the rural university funding. I'd also like to address the mental health and alcoholism funding. I feel that it should be fully supported. Too many people think that alcoholic and Bush resident are synonymous. That concept is slowly changing through education, rehabilitation, and treatment. The only way to combat the economic devastation, not to mention the personal disasters due to the mental health and substance abuse problems, is to support the programs that are working to alleviate the problems. And just like with education, every person that is helped in rural Alaska, one less person will be a lifelong drain on the resources of all Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Tina Barger.
Jamai, my name is Tina Barger, and I am the program manager for SAVE, the Domestic Violence Program for the Bristol Bay Region. I am here today to ask you to restore the funding for alcohol treatment and intervention services. The reason is that SAVE and the people we serve have a serious stake in seeing these services continue. SAVE currently operates the Sister Program, a joint venture with Jake's Place, the regional alcohol treatment program for women who are battered and chemically dependent with young children so they are able to get treatment as well as safe shelter. The sister program is also supported through an innovative community grant for FAS prevention awarded to SAFE that provides child care to women in treatment and other parents participating in sobriety support activities. The sister program has been highlighted as a best practices model in both state and national forums. The cuts proposed under the budget document before you would likely spell an end to the sister program and leave dozens of young mothers without resources to get safe and sober. We are working hard out here to put an end to alcoholism, violence, and fetal alcohol exposure, and all the horror that goes along with it. Off the knee. Thank you.
Thank you. Nels Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Nils Anderson. I'm a member of the Bristol Bay Campus Council. I've been doing that for about 12, 13 years now. And I want to thank the legislature and the University of Alaska for all the assistance that they've given us in the past. I think members of the committee know that we've had two back-to-back fisheries disasters here. And the pressure that's being placed on the University of Alaska Bristol Bay campus is increasing. And if you folks cut back on funding, people that need the additional training through voc tech training and or academic training, they're going to have a great deal of difficulty getting into the workforce. So it would be counterproductive to the state of Alaska if they were to cut back, because I think it would put increases on other areas of the budget that you folks have been trying to cut in the past. So I would urge you folks to please give the University of Alaska the additional money that they're requesting and give your full support for the campuses in rural Alaska, because we think that we're making a contribution that is essential to Alaska's future economic development. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Nels, anyone else in Dillingham?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll close testimony from Dillingham. And we'll move on to the Seward Legislative Information Office.
This is Dixie Landenberger in Seward, and I'm the prevention team leader at Seaview Community Service, and I'm speaking today to ask you not to support cuts to the substance abuse and mental health services in the communities. Reducing the services creates social problems that can't be ignored. Treatment supports people and enables them to function at their highest level and still stay in their own community. It reduces crime, domestic violence, assaults, driving under the influence, and all other kinds of social problems that will crop up if we cannot offer these services. I'm asking you to support the alcohol tax as a means of revenue to contribute to paying for substance abuse services in the communities, and look at other revenue sources and not consider cuts as a way to balance the budget. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Melanie Weems?
Yes, this is Melanie Weems. I am also asking you to please not support cuts in the treatment for substance abuse and mental health. I see the problems of substance abuse and mental health coming to Alaska Vocational Technical Center from all over the state, and I see the difference treatment makes in the lives of these people for them to succeed in school and to be able to obtain and survive in a healthy life. Thank you.
Thank you. Janet Buchanan.
Yes, this is Janet Buchanan, and I'd like to read a statement that Randy Crystal had wrote. He is a client at our group home, and he reads, "I wish to protest the cutting of the funds for persons in need of mental health care. I feel that this money is better spent treating and preventing problems that will, in all likelihood, become an even costlier problem when they come up as public safety and police problems. I am a 48-year-old man who suffers from depression. I've had this problem all my life, but didn't realize it. Recently became so bad for me that I cannot function well enough to support myself and fear that I am in danger to myself and others. Without help to pay for medication and to receive therapy to help me recover, I may never be able to again become a productive member of our society. Something that I want to do very much. I have been a member of the workforce since the age of 13 when I worked in our family business. My taxes have helped to pay for this type of service and help for others, and I sincerely hope that funding will not be cut when I require these services. Thank you very much for your time, Randy.
Thank you for your testimony. Angus Kuntz.
Hi, my name is Angus Kuntz. I'm asking you guys to not support the cut. I've had mental illness problems as a child because of problems and lack of funding rather than my parents could handle me. I can handle later, so they kicked me out when I was 14, and I grew up with this problem, fighting life and society, trying to self-medicate whenever I possibly could. I was able to get in the military. My time there was not the most well spent. They diagnosed me as being combat fatigue with my mental illness. The medicines that I take and that I need to take, I cannot afford on my own. And like I said, I think cutting back on these would be a really bad idea. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Sung Kin Linder.
Minor adjustment there. Yeah, my name is Sung Kim Linder, and I'm here on behalf of the mental health clinic and mental health patients and asking that cuts not be made in the mental health areas. I became mentally ill a few years back, and I had fallen into a bad pattern. And coming up from the bottom, you need financial help, you need smart support from your community, and you need well-trained people to take care of you when you can't take care of yourself. And money is a big deal in this segment of society, as it is in all segments. And I just wanted to speak up and be heard, and maybe my vote and my cast in this situation will help funding continue into the mental health realm. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Seward's other participants have gone.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Then we will close testimony from Seward and move on to Valdez. And the first person signed up in Valdez is Alicia Todd.
Good afternoon. Alicia had to leave, so I guess I will speak for the group. There are two of us here now and a dozen that were here. My name is Doug DeSorcy. I'm here with Janice Johnson. I've been in Alaska since 1982 and actually lived in Valdez for the past 10 years. I'm currently employed with Prince William Sound Community College, which is obviously part of the University of Alaska. The college here is an independently accredited community college within the University of Alaska system. It offers quality instructional programs and staff for our students. We do service 44,000 square miles throughout Prince William Sound in the Copper Basin region. We're here today to let you know that we fully support the university's request. We want you to take a hard look at that and consider full funding. I have a list of names that I'd like to read off that were here, if I may, and then Janice is here as well, so Janice Johnson. Alicia Todd, resident of Valdez, fully funding, supports full funding at the University of Alaska. Rainier Masters, Valdez resident student, fully supports funding, University of Alaska. Casey Hamilton, student, Prince William Sound Community College, supports full funding, University of Alaska. John Heischer, student. Minnie Andrews, student, Michael Holcomb, resident of Valdez, employee, Prince William Sound Community College. Kuli Tukchuk, student, Prince William Sound Community College. Jessica Prince, student, Prince William Sound Community College, fully support, full funding, University of Alaska. And Andrea Corcoran, Valdez resident and employee of Prince William Sound Community College, fully supports funding. I'm proud to be a part of such a dynamic and vibrant system and powerhouse at Prince William Sound Community College and part of the University of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. I'm not sure how many people are left then there.
My name's Janice Johnson. I'm the only other person that was able to stay.
Okay, Janice, did you wish to testify?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I strongly support full funding of the University of Alaska. I believe it's the responsibility of the university to make a contribution to Alaska's the development of Alaska's workforce. If we consider that we are a democratic society, the basis of that society is a literate and informed citizenry. And citizens with skills that can secure employment and become economically self-sufficient. Education is the key to achieving both of those goals. The University of Alaska plays a key role in the development of a strong workforce and a strong economy in our state. Rural campuses and Prince William Sound Community College play key roles in delivering education and training to rural communities throughout Alaska. Many Alaskans cannot leave their home communities and their families to attend UAA, UAF, or UAS. Many of those Alaskans also find the size of those communities and campuses impossible to navigate. Alaska is a diverse state. We need diversity in our educational system. And the programs that are provided at the smaller campuses, the rural campuses and Prince William Sound Community College are a vital part of meeting the educational and workforce development needs of our citizens. Thank you very much for your service to the citizens of Alaska, and I hope that you will see your way to fully fund the university.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, now we're going to go to Cordova, and the first person signed up there was Corey Erickson.
Yeah, I wanted to enter my testimony on Senate Bill number 289. I want to see our alcohol and drug abuse programs kept going. If there are cuts that bill, this is going to hurt the people who need the services from the counselors who are helping them with their problems. If you come back now, I'm concerned about more cuts taking place in the future. The problem that I have with this is if we don't have our programs and the counselors available, I feel we're going to see more problems. And when I see problems, I'm thinking of domestic violence, people that are going to be committing crimes, and our jails are already overcrowded, and I feel it's important that we keep our programs going and hoping that this will help to keep costs down so that we don't have to keep building more jails and other facilities. And where people can get the help they need it, I feel this is very vital, not only to our community, but throughout the state of Alaska. And being in the work that I am, I have seen a lot of problems in the past, but I'd like to see our programs kept going so that people can get help. Thank you for your time and listening to me.
Thank you. Nicole Songer.
Thank you. I'm Nicole Songer, and I'm representing the Family Resource Center here in Cordova. And I would like to say that I'm strongly opposed to any cuts on this bill. The 20% that you guys are proposing may seem like just a little amount across the board, but rural agencies, that's a lot. That could mean the closing of one agency. Someone had stated once before, oh, 20%, so what, you're going to lose one or two people? Well, when you have one or two employees, that is a dramatic cut. The DFYS program, the Family Preservation Grant, those grants, we're trying to keep the families together. If we cut those grants, you know, what purposes will we be serving in trying to keep families together in Alaska? In the rural areas, I would just like to strongly say we already have limited resources. we're already lacking in a lot of services that we're unable to get, and please just consider these cuts before you make a decision. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Nicole. Denny Weathers?
Hi, my name is Denny K. Weathers. I guess I'm going to be the exception here. I've also sent in written testimony today, too. Mr. Chairman, I'm glad to see that the legislature is attempting to balance the budget and at the same time trying to cut the cost. Alaska is a Republican form of government, one in which the powers of the sovereignty are vested in the people and exercised by the people, either directly or through their representatives chosen by the people, to whom the powers are specifically delegated. Sorry about that. Remember the chain of command. God created man created the Constitution, and the Constitution created the government. And then the government created the public service, such as the agencies. The people are to be in control. Government is not supposed to take over where the private sector is available. And many of the functions within the government are not mandated government functions. Many agencies have usurped the powers that rightfully belong to the people, and it is wrong. Now I will address the agencies one by one that I have found on the internet today. Administration still could have more cuts. As I have said in the past, public radio, for one, is not a necessity, and it competes directly with the private sector. Commerce and economic development should not be funding things that are handled under the private sector, such as tourism, fishing, logging, trapping, mining. These all belong in private sector, not government. Courts, until these court systems start operating according to and under the Constitution of the United States of America and the principles of the Declaration of Independence, their funds should be cut. Remember, in 1789, Thomas Jefferson warned that the judiciary, if given too much power, might ruin our republic and destroy our rights. We're almost there now. Education and early development, totally overpaid and a blatant misuse of funds. Cut to the core. If you plan to fund education, fund each child at the same rate, no matter what their background or where they live within the state. Remember what Thomas Jefferson said. The course of history shows that as a government grows, liberty decreases. Environmental conservation. Not only should this department not be funded, but it should be disbanded from its unethical actions. At one point, the DE commissioner told us that the statute, we have statutes, we have regulations, and then we have our policy. This was put in writing. That's not what we need. I know I'm running out of time, so I'll just hope you'll read my testimony, and I'll end with the last couple of things here. There are people who profit from corrupt and oppressive governments. They are the employees and beneficiaries of such governments, and they will defend that corrupt system, even if it is self-destructing. The budget process is one way the legislature can bring the unruly, oversized government back under control. Good luck. I support you and hope you can do it. I know you have a lot of people that make money off of it, so good luck. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Kenny? No. We have no questions here. We thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else at the Cordova LIO? Okay, then we will go to the Kenai LIO. Senator Ward, did you want to chair for the
sure.
Kenai portion? The first person there is James Fisher.
Hello, Senate Finance Committee. My name is James E. Fisher. I live in Soldotna, Alaska. I would pose my testimony as questions. Will you be able to look the Alaska public in the eye to explain how you have failed to institute reasonable financial support for their essential state services? This question is posed since I understand that the Senate has apparently approximated the general fund budget proposed by the House. Even more moderate Senate changes would result in painful slashes for essential education, public health, and safety. I ask, will those cuts, one, in any way enhance the overall lives of all Alaskan residents, even those who must only worry about the safety of such a simple matter as eating in a restaurant? Two, how can the estimated reductions of 19 to 23 or more fewer troopers adequately respond to death, disaster, and critical search and rescue for anyone or all of us? How can our children receive even the level of education now available under our presently stressed financial school systems? Answering the apparent factual situation of these questions challenges the Senate to explain the multiple adverse impacts that will affect your constituents and our neighbors. Won't the failure to avoid the adverse impact outlined above look like a failure of nerve of the Senate? I would be glad to answer any questions the committee may wish to pose, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. There are no questions of the committee members, and anybody that does have their testimony in writing that would like to give it to the LIO offices, they will forward it on to us. The next person that I have on is Rosemary Reeder.
This is Rosemary Reeder. I've been involved in community education for the last 35 years, first as a volunteer, then a board member, and most recently as a community school coordinator in the city of Soldotna. The proposed cut to the community school budget of $500,000 to $300 statewide, which is a 40% cut, is huge. The small amount of money that we do get, $7,000 to my Soldotna site, is the program money that we use to open the doors initially for all the programming that we do. It keeps the schools and other facilities open, and then we can use those facilities to leverage that small amount of money into some other functions classes that we provide for children, adults, and families on an ongoing basis. We can use that money to provide after-school, weekend, and summer activities, like I said, for children as well as adults. We can also, and we have been doing this very regularly over the last few years, to absorb some of the funding cuts that we've already taken from the state, other funding agencies, and have tried to absorb those by working together, making more things happen with less money, raising our own fees, cutting corners, etc. It seems like a huge cut to us. We're using buildings that are already paid for, which are schools and other municipal facilities, and we are using buildings that are already lit, already cleaned, and we're hoping to do the best we can with the $500,000 that we hope you will reinstate in the budget. Thank you for your time and your energy.
Thank you very much. And the next person I have is Grace Merkus. Grace, are you there?
I'm here. Senator Lehman and other members of this committee, thank you for the time that you are putting into this committee financing structure that you're doing here. Today, I'm speaking about our Head Start program. Maybe some of you have figured that out already. Head Start to me is one of the special things that I really support, and I know you're asking to cut a lot of things, but I think Head Start needs to be really looked at as a serious matter. The governor has proposed in his budget over $10 million, and the House has proposed $9,600,000. And the Senate, thank you very much, has changed it, added some to it to $9,900,000. So I want to thank you for that addition, and hopefully we might be able to get some more if we can find some other funds somewhere. We would really appreciate that. I really feel like Head Start is just a wonderful program for our low-income and special needs kids. It gives them a really good start getting into school, into kindergarten already. Our students at the Sterling School, the teachers there have said they can see the difference already. It's a great thing to get kids a start, an early start. 3 to 5 years old has been proven to be the age where they learn the most, they're the most interested in learning, they just like a sponge, they pick up everything that is available for them to learn. They learn discipline, how to follow rules, good eating habits, good health habits. I have to say it's just a wonderful, wonderful program, and I really would like you to see the results of it. We need the extra 20%. Our federal government does fund Head Start 80% if you get the program going, but we need the extra 20% that we have to match, and the state helps us out with that. So we really appreciate whatever you can do for us, and thank you all for your time. I know this is a long, tedious budget time for you, and just thanks a lot to everybody.
Thank you very much, Grace. The next person that we have is Rosemary Bushin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and or good evening, as the case may be, and thanks for hanging in there with us. I am following on the heels of Grace here. I live in Soldotna, but I am right now hold a position as the director or coordinator of the new Sterling Head Start program that started a year ago last January in 2001. I have a educational background of 28 years. I've taught almost every grade level, and I've been in administration, and I found myself at the Head Start doorstep, and wanted to know what that was all about, and I can tell you, at this stage in my life, I'm hard to impress, but this is an impressive program. What I find to be impressive is the fact that it's developmentally appropriate for kids. It has extremely high quality. I like the accountability that I see. We are now, this year, sending 21 kids off to 7 different kindergartens on the peninsula. Every one of those kids can write their name. They can identify colors, shapes. They can count. They have phonemic awareness, listening skills, self-help skills, which may not seem important to you, but if you take a kindergarten teacher, has 25 students, and they have to zip up coats and tie shoes for those 25 kids, let me tell you, a lot of learning time is lost. They have language concepts that are just amaze me, and their fine and gross middle school skills have really increased. It is, as a kindergarten teacher, if I had these students walking in my classroom that had these skills, I can tell you that we would make them meet the benchmark test at the end of the year, with beyond a doubt. I'm also impressed with the fact that the teachers have to do lesson plans, extensive lesson plans, and turn them in, and they're looked over and they're scrutinized. I am thoroughly pleased about the partnership that we have going with parents. It's really a unique and unprecedented kind of educational program that we have. We sit down and we work with parents on educational goals, etc. I can tell you that in order to continue and to meet the goals of the Early Childhood Associate Certificate, we are going to have to continue the funding that you have proposed or even increased to the governor's level. I am concerned about salaries. Salaries are really low. High turnover rate in Head Start staff. And that needs to be addressed so that we can keep these programs going. I urge you to think young and to continue to support Head Start funds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rosemary. Senator Wilkins has a question for you.
Okay.
Ms. Reeder, if Ms. Reeder is still there, regarding the community schools.
Yes, I am.
The House budget came to us with zero for community schools, and the Senate budget has put back the $300,000. I just want to make sure you're aware of that.
With my understanding, the House budget was $500,000, and you cut it to three. Is that incorrect?
No, ma'am. The House budget was zero, and we added $300,000 back.
That's interesting. I'm looking at a sheet that tells me the opposite, so I guess I've been misinformed.
The confusion is the House gave an unallocated reduction, which the department said they would use a portion of that for the community schools, which took the community school funding to zero.
Interesting. Thank you very much for that piece of information. I will work on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Reed.
Okay, and the next one is Marion Nelson.
Marion has chosen to do written testimony, so we'll go to the next one on the list.
Marjorie Hayes.
I'm Marge Hayes, Chair of the Alaska Commission on Aging. We're very concerned over DEC's food safety reduction. It would impact the nutrition programs of the commission. Federal regulations require periodically that food be inspected. This involves some things that seniors are very much counting on, such as congregate meals and the meals on wheels. On behalf of the four beneficiary boards of the Mental Health Trust Authority, I would like to especially encourage you to put back the money in the mental health budget. I'd like to encourage you to restore it. The chronically mentally ill are not the only services needed by Alaska residents. Depression, marital problems, anxiety disorders, and so forth can become serious community problems if not treated satisfactorily. Centers are struggling now just to keep up with the client needs. The personal position I would like to mention to you is I'd like to see more invested in state parks, not cuts. Motorhomes very soon will be rolling into Kenai anytime now. Tourists fish from the parks, use trails, and enjoy the beauty of our rivers and our mountains. An experience in Fred Meyer's parking lot is not the same. Even if parks are closed, they will be used and quite possibly thrashed. We're trying to lessen our dependence on oil and increase the tourism industry. Parks are a major factor in this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the next person that I have is Michael Tilley.
I'm Michael Tilley. Have chosen not to testify. I believe next is Jason.
Jason Nelson?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Jason Nelson. I'm the retired fire chief for the
City of Kenai. At this time, I'm also a president of the Kenai Peninsula Fire Chiefs Association and a member of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. I also hold the position as chairman of the board for the Southern Region Emergency Medical Services Council. I'd like to address the cuts made to the Emergency Medical Services Grant section. At this time, I would like to encourage you to fully fund at the governor's submitted level the Emergency Medical Services Grant section, as the cuts will impact the services that we can provide to the state in a number of different critical key areas. I am sure that you're aware, in the past several years, we have done some white papers with regards to EMS and crisis in Alaska, and that there are a number of departments, volunteer and paid, who are suffering, especially the rural departments, where they don't have the money to buy equipment, can't retain the volunteers, so therefore these departments are slowly eroding, and there are actually places now in the road system where if you are unfortunate enough to have an accident and are even lucky enough to call for help, help may be some distance away. The funding that you have proposed to cut is also allows us to obtain some fairly good sources of federal funding that we've worked very hard to accommodate this crisis in the terms of Code Blue project, whereas we're looking at federal funds from the Rasmussen Foundation, the Denali Foundation, and part of that state match that we requested for is in your cuts. Along with that, there's, I believe, $204,000 that will directly impact the Emergency Medical Services section. This filters down to the local level, and here on the Central Peninsula, we could see some very significant cuts. I encourage you to fully fund this level and appreciate your help in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The next person that we have is Katie Stafford.
Hello, good evening to the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Katie Stafford, and I'm a supervisor of the Division of Family and Youth Services here in Kenai. I also supervise the Homer office, and I'm a member of the National Association of Social Workers. First, I want to start by thanking you for putting in some of the money that the House Committee took out of the budget to fund the Bloom Project and the social workers so that we're not losing any positions. I also am here to talk about talk for the children and talk for the people who aren't able to come here, to the needy and disabled. The current budget, which is cutting funds to family preservation, will mean that children will not be reunified with their family either at all or as quickly as they possibly could have been. The cuts to drug and alcohol programs will mean that children will be away from their families, people will be waiting to get in drug and alcohol treatment, and children will continue to be abused because they don't have the programs to be able to go to. The cuts in the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program will have an impact on children and families across the state of Alaska. I believe that there's already been a passage of the removal of the permanent fund for those individuals, and those effects will be widespread, not just to the permanent fund, and the cuts to the mental health program. Without all the services in place for our family, we are not able to effectively do our job, and you will receive more complaints from our families and the people who are working with us, not less. And so I just want you to remember, please, as you're considering the budget, I know you have a lot of differing perspectives to look from, but I want to ensure that the budget is not being balanced on the backs of the children, the needy, and the disabled. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The next person I have is James Shield.
Members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm Executive Director of Central Peninsula Counseling Services. We're the Community Mental Health Center here for the Central Peninsula area. We're a private corporation with $6 million in revenue. We provide services to approximately 430 adults and 330 children, employ about 100 people. I'm here testifying about the cut to the general mental health portion of our grant that we received, House Bill 404, that was passed to you. We have the demographics of our area, and you know this of all people, that we have a lot of people in our community who make too much for Medicaid, but they don't have private insurance. They are sometimes classified as the working poor or the working class. If this bill passes, many of these will not have access to mental health care. In the past 2 years, we've served 80 kids and 250 adults under this grant. And again, without these services, you're going to have an increase in services by law enforcement, DFYS, and the hospital emergency room. Through our services, these clients, this particular group of clients, can maintain jobs, they can be kept off welfare and Medicaid, and an ultimate savings to their community. Now, I know that that many of you campaigned under being fiscally responsible. I guess I just want to ask the question, is it fiscally responsible to take dollars away from a private corporation when there's going to be increased in services to state-run agencies? And I, finally want to say I understand your job's difficult. You're in a difficult situation because of the state's fiscal imbalance. However, I hope you'll practice constraint when dealing with, this group of citizens' health care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Green has a question of you.
Could you specify which mental health program you're talking about?
The general mental health. It's not the SED or the CMI. It's the general mental health. It's the one that we've taken cuts in almost every budget cycle. That really hits our area hard because of the lack of insured, and again the working class.
Okay, thank you. Well, the budget I'm looking at shows increases in all the sections of under mentally ill over the House budget by about at least $600,000. And then I'm just trying to, is that what you're comparing to?
I'm comparing it. There's another cut. We have been cut continually for the past three cycles in this particular area, while we've been maintained in the other areas, and we appreciate that. The numbers I received this morning still say another 3% cut.
Maybe
while
you could...
that may not sound like much, in this area it is, just because of our demographics.
Senator Green.
Well, the numbers I'm looking at show a $150,000 increase. $150,000 increase to chronic services for the chronically mentally ill over last year. So I'm just wondering if you could fax your information to me. I'd appreciate seeing it.
Right, but it's not the chronically mentally ill. That's my point. There's a different category of chronically mentally ill. Those have always been protected, along with the children. But what I'm talking about are the people who are not chronically mentally ill, the people who hold a job, who make too much for Medicaid, but don't have insurance. They're typically the small contractors to the petroleum industry, the fishing guys, the commercial fishermen. These people who have a child or themselves who have mental illness, this is the group that's typically been cut, and there's just no... If you look at what's called General Community Mental Health Grant, that's the group I'm talking about. That's the portion of funds I'm talking about, not the CMI grant services or SEDU.
Okay. Well, I would just say that there's still an increase over what the House funded. And that does not include what the overall decrease that the House was spreading across the budget. So the Senate version is considerably better than the House version. It may not be what you want, but we did improve it. So anyway.
James, thank you for your testimony. Maybe you could give that to the LIO operator and they could forward that 3% reduction so that we could look at it here. With that, is there anybody else to testify in Kenai that's not on the list?
No, there is.
Thank you very much. We'll close Kenai out and go to Kodiak. And Kenai is closed out. Kodiak, the first person that I have on is Don Roberts. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Please give your testimony, your name and testimony, if you could.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Roberts. I've lived in Kodiak for about 5 years now. This proposed budget and the abomination Senate Bill 340 make a mockery of what a democracy is, or what at least a democracy ought to be, everybody contributing what they can. This proposed budget and Senate Bill 340 are the results of the healthy, the well-to-do, trying to maintain their privileged status on the backs of the poor and the disabled, those least able or least likely to take a stand or raise their voices. Cutting equally is not the same as cutting fairly. A cut that merely discomforts some will bleed others dry. I urge you to reconsider your proposal and not cut so deeply. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Don. The next person that we have in Kodiak is Pat Holmes. Are you there?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope Alan's right hand is healed up from Con Fish there from all his handshaking.
It is.
Good. I appreciate your the Senate majority's approach in the past on budget cutting, and I think you've kind of got things down to the bone. And I think that it should be time to be addressing increases in income and be prudent with the cuts you're looking at. I'm going to try and run through these as quick as I can. I think in terms of income, I'd like to see a state income tax like we used to have and a head tax for schools and not a sales tax. Most small towns are already pushing their max on sales tax, and if Kodiak gets one, we're going to be right up there. I'm not going to do much detail on schools, senior services, or municipal assistance and DEC because there's other folks here to talk about it. I want to run through my list really quick, and so that I can stay inside the two-minute window here. On fish and game, I really appreciate that the Senate is funding the subsistence division where the House had it cut. I would hope that you restore funding for Bering Sea crab. That makes millions of dollars for our community. The genetics program is really important as far as fishery stock separation and all the issues that go on in all the interception fisheries in the state. Public safety, cuts for that affect troopers and fish and wildlife protection, the BPSOs. People got to make a living, and if their salaries go up, then cutting people, all these cuts that you proposed disproportionately affect people that live in rural communities. In Anchorage, you probably don't make a great deal of beans for most folks, but if you live out of town and have to take a ferry or fly, it hurts. DEC, food inspection, sanitation for public schools, I really think those programs have to be maintained for public health. Education, the quality of schools initiative, and everything. I'm getting tapped. I got to go. Okay.
Thank you very much. And if your testimony, if you do have it in writing, please submit it to the LIO, and they will forward it on to us. The next person that I have is Everett Stone.
Yeah, good evening. Everett Stone here. I'm a retired DEC sanitarian with years of experience in sanitation and seafood inspection. I've come here today to protest the legislature's plan to eliminate DEC sanitation inspection program and local seafood inspection position, which is protect the public health since territorial date. One important thing I've learned during my state work is that public facilities such as restaurants, senior centers, food stores, schools, daycare, and food processing facilities lacking state inspection often develop serious problems which put the public at high health risk. Take, for example, a large processing vessel in Dutch Harbor years ago, which had a waterborne Giardia outbreak. Some 180 workers became violently sick with this gastrointestinal illness. The firm did not have the technical expertise to identify the problem themselves. DEC inspectors visiting the site identified the cause of the outbreak, instituted corrective action, thus sparing employees further suffering. The legislators plan to eliminate one Kodiak seafood inspection position jeopardizes our local seafood industry's health and reputation. Without local seafood inspection, processors run the risk of producing adulterated, unsafe seafood products that kill or make people sick and endanger our industry's reputation. Past examples of this include parallax shellfish poisoning and botulism deaths from improperly canned salmon. It is tragedies such as these that endanger the Alaska seafood industry's reputation. Kodiak's livelihood is seafood. We can't afford to jeopardize our reputation. It's not common sense to abolish a program that is almost entirely self-sufficient to balance the budget. The result is the public is left with little savings and no public health inspection. Local governments do not have the budget to take over sanitation programs. In addition, in any event, the state will not be saving $1.5 million as suggested. The user fee for this program generates $1.36 million annually, which is less than $150,000 savings. The difference could be made up by a 10% increase in user fees. Where is the sense in cutting critical public health programs when they can be funded without tapping the PDF or an income tax? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Lehman has a question for you.
This is actually just clarification. The testifier may not have heard my previous comment. The Senate budget does not propose what he testified to. We do believe that sanitation and food inspection, seafood inspection is important. And I just want to make sure that anybody listening doesn't believe that. And so this budget does not propose that.
Thank you. Dave Jones is next.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dave Jones. I'm the Director of Finance for the School District in Kodiak. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the increase to transportation, pupil transportation. That's a cost that as a school district we're contractually obligated to, and we appreciate the increase in that. I also appreciate the level funding for the base student allocation value and the learning opportunity grants. Unfortunately, though, level funding is not fully funding education when you take inflation into account. Just a couple local examples for you. In the last 2 years, we've experienced a 55 to 60% increase in our travel costs and freight costs for our villages where we have schools. We also, like everybody else across the state, have experienced drastic increases in health insurance costs, and health insurance is a key factor in attracting quality teachers to our district. I want to put in a plug for Senator Wilkins, Senate Bill 1 there, which he drafted to match the recent inflation based on the Anchorage CPI U. I also am concerned about the cuts that are put for the Department of Education there. As a district, we depend on the department to support us, especially in the newly mandated programs like the high school qualifying exam, the benchmark tests, and preventive maintenance programs. I also understand with the recent passage of the No Child Left Behind program at the federal level, it requires that the Department of Education manage and disperse dollars that were sent directly to the school districts in the past. I'm concerned that the proposed cuts to the department will hinder their ability to provide quality assistance that we need from them. In the end, what I want to say is we need to institute a fiscal plan, and we need to do a fiscal plan now. The state's faced with revenue sources that are eroding as we speak, and each year that we put off a long-range fiscal plan, the more it's going to cost the people of Alaska in the end. Again, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to speak today. That's all.
Thank you for your testimony. Pat Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Carlson. I'm serving as the manager for the Kodiak Island Borough, and I'm here today in obviously direct recognition of the difficult process you have before you and recognizing how difficult it is to find solutions to all these statewide issues.